Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Live conversation. The theme today?
Yeah, is there a theme?
There's no theme. Oh, it's beer. Beer sessions. Okay, let's go. Oh, hey. hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We were talking about the pre-show game talk that we always give, and hope you got to listen in on that. As we said, there's no theme. It's Beer Sessions Radio, and we get to talk. We got some great guests on. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's Tuesday, June 23rd, 2015. We've got some amazing guests in this room, but first, thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. And if you have any questions for our guests today, you can tweet us live at beer_sessions. Maggie's out there tweeting live, and we'll answer your questions. So this is a jam-packed show the way we like it. We've got some interesting guests. I'm gonna make a few introductions, and everybody say hello. We got a gentleman traveling from New Zealand who in the 1960s was first homebrewing. He's a brewer now, and he's been traveling the States, working with Shelton Brothers, and you'll probably start hearing more about his beers. Ben Middlemiss of Ben Middlemiss Brewers. How are you, Ben?
I'm very good. Thanks, Jimmy.
It's really nice to meet you, man. You're a gentleman, and you represent a long line of homebrewing and professional brewing.
Yeah, it's been I guess it seems like it all started yesterday, but it's been a long road, but an absolute fun-packed time.
All right. And then a new brewer that we've just met, but he's been in the scene a while, Jake Sorrell. You're up at what? From the Ground Brewers up in Red Hook, New York.
That's correct.
So you're actually brewing on a farm.
On
small
the farm,
batch beer.
Small batch beer using ingredients grown on the farm. And there's a malt house just up the road as well. And we get a lot of our hops. They grow hops and we get the malt malted there. And so the majority of our beers, all of our beers, at minimum, we're using 70% New York State ingredients. So that's malt and hops. So, yeah, we're just trying to keep it real local.
That's great. And we'll talk more about you know being a New York State farm brewery license and what's going on. Two upstarts who've made their mark. They won GABF Award last year. Joe and Lauren Grimm from Grimm Artisanal Ales. How are you guys?
We're good.
Hello.
All right. It's funny. We walked into Roberta's here where our studio is, and everyone, all the guests, their first pick was the Grimm Goza, which you guys made. So, and then you guys walked in, and I was like, it's like, what's that called when Josh Bernstein's here, Ben Keen,
Joel Sheldon.
What's it called when you're thinking of someone or you know, they're mementos in the room and all of a sudden they walk in?
Stalking?
Stalking.
The devil.
The devil. But anyways, that's cool. So we're drinking your beer, and then you guys walked in, and now you're stuck. You got to sit on the show with us.
How do you say, is it super going or super going, I want to say?
Oh, maybe
super going,
and that's your Goza. So you got super Josh Bernstein back on the show, man. How are you?
Ain't gonna happen.
You've been doing so many cool things between your books, and you're doing a lot of special events with homebrewers too.
Yeah, we just wrapped up one last weekend over at Arrogant Swine. We did a solstice session where we did all session beers, mead, ciders, like 14 homebrewers, 15 pro brewers, and then I took a long nap.
All right, and it's been Ben Keen. We knew you as the hiking beer writer, and now you're the editor for Beer Advocate
Magazine.
And I
put on so much weight now.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I just keep packing it on.
You're like
great
our local.
To be back.
I was so psyched when I heard you were the editor of Beer Advocate Magazine. And now I think I actually have to start reading it. So,
yeah, I was going to say I was psyched to have a new reader, but apparently you haven't actually been reading.
We got a lot to talk about. Joel Sheldon's here, too. He brought in Ben Middlemiss, and let's take it away. So let's start with Jake. You know that for New York, the farm brewery license, it changed a lot of things. It enabled different people to open brewery licenses and everything else. Tell us about your experience because, you know, we focus so much on beer, but we forget that beer is from, what, grain and hops? And
it's from the ground.
It's supposed to be farm-based.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the idea was originally when I wanted to open up a brewery was to keep it local. and a lot of things kind of came into place, just fell into place. The farm brewery license is one of them, where, you know, I was planning on opening the brewery, and then all of a sudden I hear about the farm brewery license, and it's not as expensive as the normal microbrewery license, and there's other retail privileges involved with it. And the licenses, you can use 20%, or you're supposed to use 20% New York State grain and 20% New York State hops. And then the other thing that kind of worked out was I was looking for a space in Red Hook, New York, and I ended up sending out some emails to some farmers, and I sent out an email to Ken Miglarelli of Miglarelli Farm, and he answered me back the next day, called me up and said, hey, you know, we're growing grain now, we're growing barley, and it would be really great to have a brewery on the farm. And so he showed me around, we picked a space, I moved in there, and then I started building out the space. It's a one-barrel system. And the next thing that happened was a malt house opened up 3 miles up the road, mm-hmm. which was, like, amazing. It was like, it's like that moment when you're talking about a friend and they walk into the room. And
synchronicity.
Synchronicity. Yeah, what do you call that?
That's it.
Right, right.
Word of the day, man.
Synchronicity, it was. And so that's kind of like the magic.
I bet the next Grim Beer is going to be called Synchronicity.
No, or my, well, it depends. You know, I might take the name.
Write that down, Ben.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
We'll do it first. Guarantee it's already taken.
Yeah, every good name's taken. So yeah, that's kind of what we're doing right now, I'm the only person really at the brewery. I have two salespeople, but we sell in Union Square Farmers Market Friday and Saturday, and then we have a local market where we're located. And
well, I'll tell you, that it's huge, because talk about farm brewery. A lot of people have been able to use the license to open and have nothing to do with the farm, but that you're actually on a farm is huge. Ken Migliarelli is one of the top farmers in the Grow NYC green market system in New York City. Just in case you guys don't know, he's up in the Hudson Valley. So this is huge news, and I've heard about it. And first of all, your beer is awesome. So quickly tell us what this beer is, because it's really good.
It's an American Pale Ale. And when I was kind of conceptually thinking about it, I had kind of been out of the industry for a while. And I was, my concept was, okay, it's going to be a pale ale. I'm going to really kind of have a real nice hop nose. The bitterness isn't going to be too much. Make it nice and sessionable. Basically, had the recipe all set. And then I kind of start getting into reading more about Beer Advocate, whatever. And then I hear this Session IPA. And it's just like, oh, okay, great. Now, I should have, you know, like, in the Session IPA, that's kind of the hot, you know, trending mm-hmm. name. So like, you could kind of call it a Session IPA. But yeah, basically it's 96% New York State malted and grown grain, and 20% hops that are grown just up the road. And then I do a dry hop, pretty big dose of Amarillo and Mosaic. And
so Jake, you were mentioning you were out of the industry for a while. So what were you doing previously? Were you, did you have a professional brewing job beforehand, or was this your first job?
Yeah. Yeah, I was. You want more?
Yeah, we want more, man.
Jimmy always wants more.
I'm motioning.
Hold on. Where's that? I was. I worked at Greenpoint Beer Works in Brooklyn. I'm not if you guys are familiar with that or not.
It's pretty much the biggest farm team for every brewer.
Yeah, in York City. Yeah, they have a nice turnover, which allowed me to get through in the door, and so I worked at that place for about 3 years. I worked with Sam Richardson of Other Half, mm-hmm. Al Duval, who's at Brooklyn Brewery mm-hmm. now. So yeah, definitely an all-star team. I quit, started thinking about starting a brewery in Brooklyn, and I was just like, this is insane. We had a baby, me and my wife. I was working at the farmer's market, so I got a job at a farm running their butcher shop up near Schenectady. So I did that for a while. Mm-hmm. And after a year, we moved to the Rhinebeck area. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started looking at places to open up a brewery. So that was my period of kind of sabbatical.
Great start. Yeah, let's jump over to New Zealand. So another guest tonight, Ben Middlemiss from New Zealand. I got an email. Joel Shelton's here. You have this guy, Ben. Tell us what he's doing. I mean, this is, like, so cool. He has a brewery in New Zealand named Ben Middlemiss Brewing, right, Ben? I think he can speak for himself.
Yeah, that's... Joel's welcome to speak if he wants. That's correct, Jimmy. My name is not really Ben. I think I may have talked about this recently, but my name is Steve. I got branded with the name. The Ben thing came about at brewing beer at high school to make a bit of pocket money so I could finance my next ventures when I was 14. And it was by an English writer called BCA or Ben Turner, and the label had Ben's Best Bitter on it. And people buying my beers believed that I was the person perpetrating the beer, so they thought I was Ben, and the name stuck. For my mother was a little bit disconcerted, but here I am today. You know, many years later, the name's still there. So
he's breaking all the laws, but he's like talking very politely.
Yeah, are you going to be marketing yourself as an outlaw brewer, Steve? Is that kind of the angle you're going for?
Who's Steve, Ben? Yeah.
Perhaps I could call a beer Steve or something, you know, and then people would be wondering what it is, and yeah.
But what are you doing here, man? I mean, you're like, they plucked you out of New Zealand and you're here in New York City.
Well, yeah, I go back a little ways with the Shelton boys because they've brought my beer into America. And I've been out here for the festival I had in Worcester back in 2012. And since then, I've become good friends with Hanson, the band from the 90s, everyone knows, the Imbop Boys.
I was not expecting the conversation to go in that direction.
Josh, do you know that band?
I did. I am 36 years
Maggie,
old. I did
Maggie, do you like the Hanson band?
Yeah, so I'm having a bit of fun brewing some beer with them in Tulsa. I'm heading back there on Friday. So
when you said Hanson, I just assumed it was like this obscure brewery, and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I've heard of Hanson in Oklahoma. But
Hanson's.
Yeah.
Their beer is Hops, right?
That's right. Yeah,
wait, Joe, do you know about Hanson? The band?
They're a Goozer blender, right?
Really?
Yeah, I'm working on some new beer ideas for them, and I have to say they're very passionate about beer. It's great to see guys in the music industry with such a love of good beer. It's very good.
And how did you get introduced to them? Let's get the backstories. You were homebrewing when you were in the 1960s.
Yeah, when the 6 o'clock swill prevailed in New Zealand and Australia, which was one of the evils of the old days of drinking. When the pubs by law had to close during the week at 6 p.m. and the workers finished at 5 o'clock, so I had an hour to go to the pub to drink. So they would go to the bar, and I, as a young paper boy, would bike past with a cycle filled with newspapers ready for delivery, and I'd look through the window into this bar and see what looked like a circus taking place inside the hotel, when people would be lining up to the bar and buying 6 jugs or 7 jugs of beer, or as you call pitchers here, of beer at a time, and they went for their friends for themselves. So they would proceed to drink those as fast as they could go, and they had to finish by 6 o'clock, or they could finish the last drinks by 6:10, and they had to be gone. So the guy was standing at the bar with a hose with a lever gun on the end of it, and he didn't take his finger off it. He was going up and down that bar filling the jugs until they overflowed, and people were just taking them away as fast as it could go. It was a bad era, a bad time in New Zealand society and Australia, but thank God, yeah, things have changed since then.
Sounds pretty awesome.
Have you guys ever heard of that? I mean, Joe? Or
yeah.
You have, Josh?
Yeah.
Tell me about it, man. This is crazy.
He told you all that needs to know about it on there. But it was. I mean, things like the flavors of beers were dulled down type of thing. You just want to drink as much as possible, and that thing that was super exciting, and so sort of like in America.
And then at 6:10 p.m., yeah. you couldn't buy any more beer.
But they had a system in some of the small towns, and where I was, they had the same deal that every night someone else would be appointed to be the sentry. So they'd stand out on the footpath, and they weren't allowed to drink, of course, but they'd keep an eye out for the cops. So then they'd stretch a little bit past 6:10, and then when they saw a police car coming, everyone would turn the lights off and in the hotel like there was nobody there and hope they didn't come in, or they'd sneak out the back way. But they used to stretch the law as much as they could.
So you're giving us a little bit of your credibility. You go way back.
Was there any kind of movement towards barley wines at that time? I'm trying to think if I had only like a moment that I could drink and I wanted to get
6 pitchers of barley wine?
No, and the beer then was about the strength of the beer. Tap beer was about 3.8%. alcohol, and it was pretty abysmal beer. I must admit, I wouldn't have been rushing up to the bar to buy it, but they did in those days, and they drank lots of it.
Well,
and,
Ben, Steve, you're making me feel under the gun. I got to drink some more of this from the ground.
It's really good, isn't it? I'm enjoying it.
It is good.
It's great. It's great.
And then, so Joe and Lauren, you know, you're the upstarts here too. So let's get a little backstory on you
upstarts.
Guys.
Upstarts.
Well, at this point,
compared to Ben Steve over there,
we're about to celebrate our 2-year anniversary as a brewery. So, yeah, we're a gypsy
brewery. Toddlers, Jimmy.
Toddlers, yeah. We're a gypsy brewery based in Brooklyn. We make limited edition beers, and you know, we don't have a farm brewery license, but we do often use New York State grown grain that we get from Valley Malt. Yeah. Joe?
We're learning to spell.
Well, I'll just talk for you. So we walked into Roberta's, and of course you've got what's the name for your Goza beer, Joe?
It's called Super Going. It's delicious. It's like a little bit tart. It's got a lot of orange zest in it, and orangey hops, mandarin, Bavaria, and whole melon, and just a little touch of salt and a lot of white oak.
All right, so we walked in, and everybody wanted to order your beer, and then you guys walked in. But I think that they're, you know, Josh, maybe you want to say something about Grimm, because they just started, and all of a sudden they've got distribution. They're like a cult brand in New York City.
What do you want me to say, Joe? I think it's fun.
We are awesome.
They're way overblown.
Josh, you know more about beer than anyone in New York, so come on.
I think the thing about them was interesting. You know, you guys had all sorts of like random, you want to do as many different beers as possible, then all of a sudden you guys win that medal at JBF with Imperial Stout, and it was like, I think we should probably make that again.
Yeah.
And there's the same thing with, Gun Hill Brewing, like Void of Light, their foreign stout was supposed to be like a one-off summer seasonal for some reason. As soon as they won, it was like, we're going to make that again right now. So I guess for you guys, what was it like? You know, you started off, you know, with, you know, grand plans to be a great brewery, but this happened pretty quickly for you. So what was it sort of like what was that moment like? Because you guys weren't even in Colorado.
Yeah, you know, when we heard, we were just walking down the street in Brooklyn, and I looked at my phone, saw a tweet from Chris O'Leary, and I was like, hey, Joe, we won a medal. And Joe was like, really? We did? And I was like, look at this. So, of course, we had to go to our local bar and celebrate. It was great.
Totally. Yeah, you know, we made that beer a second time just because it had won.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't made it again yet. I think we might make it one more time this fall. We'll see.
So it's the Grimm. What's the name of it?
That particular beer was called Double Negative. It was an Imperial Stout. Right now, we're trying to decide what we're going to send for GABF this year. Mm-hmm. Like, you only get to send a few beers in, and right now we're really excited about Dry Hop Sour. That's like all we're doing.
Do you think that I've been seeing people pinging on that quite a bit lately. You think Dry Hop Sour is sort of this like next generation with sour beers, where it's sort of marrying this idea of you know, low alcohol, easygoing, but also with hops in there too?
Definitely. I mean, you know, IPAs are the best-selling beer ever, so everybody loves hops, and you know, hops go great with sour beer when you do dry hops.
Fruitiness comes out so much more when, you know, when you actually bite into a piece of fruit, it has an acid to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our sours are not like particularly like bracingly sour or anything. They just have some acidity, which brings up those juicy fruity characters mm-hmm. from the hops, and that's what we're really focused on right now.
That sounds really good. Hey, well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Yeah.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Okay, coming back.
Hey,
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's quite a night tonight. I will say that our thoughts go out to Justin Kennedy, who's not here with us tonight. And we miss you, Justin. Hope you're doing great. We got some special guests tonight. We've been talking with Ben Middlemiss Steve from New Zealand, Josh Bernstein, Ben Keen, Joel Shelton, Jake Sorrell from the from the Ground Brewing, and Joe and Lauren Grimm from Grimm Artisanal Ale. So, Joe, you guys were talking about the GABF. I know you guys won an award last year for Double Negative. What is the process of submitting a beer to the Great American Beer Festival? Because I've always wondered how that works. And, like, what, you're shipping beer, and like, what does that beer do? Does it sit out in the warmth or the cold? I mean, how can you submit beer from all over the world and get judged? Isn't that kind of crazy?
The crazy thing is that they want the submissions to come in August 10th. So it's, like, the worst time for shipping beer through the system. And, you know, so you get, like, yourself a cooler box. You jam some, like, frozen little packages in there, and then you, like, overnight it as best you can and hope that it makes it okay.
The time difference between when you ship the beer and when they actually judge it, I mean, it does change, you know, what you end up submitting. Joe and I, well, everybody's sitting around drinking our newest double IPA right now, and we were thinking, you know, should we submit our next double IPA? I don't know, because if it's a month before, you know, judges are drinking it, and I have no idea how they're taking care of the beer. Hopefully at the GABF they they know how to do that. You know, yeah, I want it to be the best when they're judging it.
Ben Keen, Beer Advocate Editor, my buddy.
What do you want me to say, Jimmy?
Well, weigh in on judging beer. You know, yeah. It's one thing to have a lot like local homebrew competition where everyone's like in that region and everything's like shipped local and fresh. But what about national and international beer competitions?
I don't remember the exact number of judges that they have at GABF. I don't know if you know that off the top of your head, Josh.
A lot.
A lot. It's officially a lot of judges, and they bring people from across the United States, Europe, and lock them in a lightless conference room.
It's a pretty brutal, scenario. You're basically in there, and if you get stuck judging pilsners, like bully for you. But if you're on barley wine team, it's basically 10 hours in like giant convention centers, like lightless room, drinking barley wines and only talking to people about barley wines, which is a certain specific hell, but also pleasure, I guess. But
wow. Yeah, but you are assigned a category to judge, and so you will, and you know the number of entries continues to grow in leaps and bounds every year, and they do add more judges. But I think at the same time, the burden that they each have in terms of the number mm-hmm. of beers they go through is increasing. And I think they're given small breaks to deal with palate fatigue and whatnot, but it's a big job.
Do you think there's a market for more, like, smaller, regional, like, elite, you know, judging competitions?
I have talked to a lot of brewers, actually, who have said, you know, sort of semi-off the record that they would be in favor of having regional, you know, quote, Great American Beer Fest, because it's gotten to the point where, you know, we have... Mm-hmm. Pushing 4,000 breweries around the country, it's getting a little bonkers.
Yeah, and the number of brewers that you see entering the competitions tend to be sort of like disproportionately weighted toward, you know, the Rockies, West Coast, because, you know, and you see fewer and fewer brewers from the East Coast that are actually making the trip out there. Even though there are more brewers at the festival, there are fewer East Coast representatives.
So let's talk. So Joe and Lauren, you guys want to – what did you win, like a silver medal for Double Negative?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So what beer are we drinking now?
Right now we're drinking a beer called Simcoe. It's just a double IPA with all Simcoe hops. And our mission when we decided to make this beer was to take a hop that's known for being dank and piney and to turn it into something that's going to be really tropical. It's got a lot of strawberry and honeydew and other tropical sort of passion fruit kind of aromas. We wanted to see if we could take Simcoe in a different direction.
Great. As a gypsy brewer for you, like, you know, does it depend where you work? Like, I know you've been making some beers in Staten Island at Flagship Brewing.
Yeah.
Does location where you brew, does that change the way you brew? Or?
Well, you know, I mean, we basically, at the moment, we're working with a few different breweries, and it's nice for us to go in and everybody's on the same page. We all understand like what the grim processes are, and how.
What are the grim processes?
Secrets, Josh. Secrets.
Do I have to tell you that?
Is there a grim reaper?
So when we started brewing at Flagship in Staten Island, which is where we brewed Simcoe, we were like, okay, yeah, we're going to make this our IPA brewery. And when we go there, it's going to be similar processes. And the brew day is going to be so easygoing. And, you know, and then we work with another brewery where we've been honing in on our sour beers. So, yeah, all of our sour beers are coming out of a place in Northern Virginia. And all of our double IPAs are coming out of Flagship on Staten Island.
Does the Northern Virginia facility do sours as well? Or is that why you decided upon that place?
We are the only ones.
Yeah.
So what let them take the risk on you guys to do that?
Oh, you know, we're very convincing.
Sort of threatening there.
All right, so that's good. So you guys are the
joke and spell now.
You guys are just starting out. These guys winning awards, and everybody loves your beer, and I do too. But let's go back. We got this guy, Steve Ben Middlemiss. You took us back. The old days, what? You were delivering papers, yeah. And there was a 1 hour window for drinking in pubs in New Zealand
at age 14.
And how did you ever start making beer? Let's jump start this, because
well, my parents got a bit disconcerted because my other hobby, which was making explosives, was getting a bit risky. I was blowing a few things up around the place, and some of my mother's prized cookware was disappearing because I was using it to mix the ingredients of the explosives. So they could see it ending badly, and maybe they were right. So
isn't it sort of amazing, like what we did as kids back years ago, which could have gotten us, we would get thrown in jail these days. Like, we used to make bombs out of like Coca-Cola bottles, 2 liters.
Yeah,
Works toilet bowl cleaner. And
now your parents would go to jail, Josh.
Now they probably would, but yeah,
they'd go to jail for having us. That's for sure.
Just so that listeners can visualize, Ben Steve does appear to have all 10 fingers and toes.
He is wearing shoes. We can't be for sure.
So you're like, so keep going, man. This is
So I made wine to start with, and then found that I gathered a lot of friends, and they drank the vintage far too quickly, and I was very disappointed in having to wait so long for the next available ingredients. So I turned my attention to beer, thinking there's got to be, you know, why can't people make good beer at home? They must be able to do it. It's why is it just the dominion of the large breweries? And of course, they were the only ones with the information, and they were certainly not going to let it out of their grasp to anyone that wanted to try and learn for themselves. So there were a lot of people making beer at home in those days, but I have to say it was pretty bad. Generally, you find a good one, but generally speaking, they had no idea what they were doing, and that's where the stigma of home brew in New Zealand got such a bad name. I guess it might have been the same in most parts of the world. They didn't have the knowledge, and they were just trying. And so from there on in, I decided brewing became so much fun. My mother used to get a bit upset when I filled the oven up with bottles to sterilize them, because we couldn't get the sterilizing materials in those days. So I used to use her oven, and I could squeeze 100 bottles in there if I really tried. So when she came to do some baking, they opened the door up the oven to get it ready. It was full of beer bottles, just getting ready for me to bottle some beer.
So you just baked them?
Yeah, just heat them right up and get them clean first, and then just heat them really hot and then let them cool down, bottle the beer. It worked absolutely fine.
Jake, how did you start brewing? I mean, I know you worked at Greenpoint Beer Works and all that. But.
Yep. Similar wine. It was cheap and easy in college. And then I moved to Brooklyn, and a friend of mine ended up introducing me to just beer brewing. So it was like the malt extract packaging, and that was the only brew store was the one out in Queens in Flushing. You know, remember that one? I don't know, it's probably still there. It's like a hydroponic shop, and they also sold homebrewing supplies. And then I bought some equipment on eBay because I wanted to start a brewery, which it was like in Canada, and I went up and got that, and I got a loft building not too far from here in Bushwick and set that up, and I started brewing. I was reading about Grimm, and you guys started homebrewing and selling to like parties and stuff.
Totally illegal.
Don't say that on the air.
We did not do that.
Neither did I. But I did.
There's a statute of limitations. Don't worry.
But what about, let's go back. So New Zealand. So everybody's got the same experience as you, man.
That's a quick leap from Bushwick, New Zealand.
I've got to give a plug in for New Zealand.
Clock's ticking. When did you start? Are you a commercial brewer? Do you have a brewery?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, currently I'm Gypsy Brewing, but I built some large commercial breweries in a couple of different areas, but now I'm actually Gypsy Brewing and advising and consulting.
And how did you ever meet the Shelton Brothers? Because I respect, they always find story. These great brewers around the world.
Well, it's an interesting story because I was a great friend of Michael Jackson's, the beer guru. I met him back in Australia in the early 90s and looked after him while he was there, and we became close friends. And he came out to New Zealand a couple of times to see us, and he was very keen for me to produce some beers that he could use in the American market. So I produced some beer that he started chasing me for back in the end of the 1990s, and he wanted me to send it out to the University of Archaeology and Anthropology in Philadelphia for the Beers of the Millennium talk he was giving. I thought it was a tasting for the boys, and I was a bit short of stock at the time, but when I was told it was for his new book he was writing, the 500 Great Beers of the World, and he had chosen 10 beers from around the world for his choice for the top beers of the millennium, and there was only one chosen from the southern hemisphere, and that was my Benediction at the time, my Abbey style beer. Excuse me. And so I sent it out, and great expense, air freight, and then I found that Americans weren't going to let it in because of the label laws. They weren't going to allow it to go to the convention. And that's when Dan Shelton came to the rescue because of Shelton's, I think they're a special proviso, and they're allowed to bring certain samples into the country, and he managed to use that to get my beer through to make it on the last day of the event. So Michael Jackson was able to present it to the beer world at the time, and I became firm friends with Dan at that time and thanked him very much for his help, and one thing led to another, and they imported my beer into America, and here we are.
It's Steve Benn.
Yeah.
What year was this?
It was actually around 2000. Yeah, end of 1999.
There's a lot of really cool beer stories in this room. You know, Ben Keen, you know, beer advocate.
I have a question.
Go for it. That's what you're supposed to ask.
All the brewers here, having two Gypsy brewers and a very small brewer with a specific sort of angle, being a New York State focused, I'm curious what sort of pressures you all deal with that maybe larger breweries or more established breweries don't. As far as we were talking earlier, you know, you make a beer that people love or it wins an award. How do you respond to that? Or, you know, distributors or farmers markets that are clamoring for something. Could you talk a little bit about that, or maybe after the break?
I think we have time. They can each answer. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, we deal with a lot of constraints just due to being a Gypsy brewery. We don't have endless capacity. We're working with other breweries, and when they're maxed out, then we can't make any more beer. So, I mean, currently, you know, we have about, you know, 2 brew days per month, and that means, you know, we can't make, you know, every different style that we want to be making at the same time. It's kind of guided us towards our current, brewery character, which is limited edition beers.
Yeah, and how does that affect your price points as well? Because you're, you know, a lot of the things are limited edition, you know, super going, so, you know, an orange zested goza with oak, which is not something that you're going to be able to pick up for, you know, $6 a bomber.
Well, it dovetails with our interests because we naturally are motivated to make things that are going to be a little bit off the beaten path style-wise. And those are the things that you can have a business with a Gypsy brewing model doing. We obviously can't compete on price with anyone, so we have to make beer that is more compelling than anything else.
Mm-hmm. You guys are doing very well. I know that your beer sells out wholesale wise more than anybody else, so I can hardly ever get a keg. So you're doing a great job. We're going to keep going with that question. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This song's called Cool Boy by Sleepies. We'll be right back.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right, this is a wild show tonight. We got Gypsy Brewers from New Zealand, New York City, and Farm Brewer from upstate New York, and the editor of Beer Advocate and our favorite beer author, Josh Bernstein. Who's Josh? How is your complete beer guide going? Your course? It's like doing
close,
very well,
Jimmy. Yeah, it's doing pretty well. It's sort of amazing. You put something out there in the marketplace, and you're. You don't really know how it's going to be taken, but it's been really interesting to watch it take on a life of its own where, you know, I think there's a lack of knowledge when it comes to the – there's a lot of great beer in the country, but there's a lack of, like, vocabulary for bartenders to be able to actually serve it properly. So it's actually been really taken upon by a lot of bars as required reading for their, bartenders, which is – You know, you think about, like, you set out to write a book and it becomes something else entirely than you did. But it's going great. We're, I think getting ready to sign a contract, maybe redoing it again for next fall. I think because just the industry is changing so incredibly rapidly. And in the book, I mean, this, like, rankles me, but I was writing about Goza back in, like, 2013 when I was finishing the book off. There was basically Leipzig or Goza. There was nothing out in the American market. And now it's just everything. So I wrote in there, I'm like, you know, don't worry if you can't find any examples on the shelves because it's just way too hard to find. And nowadays, I mean, you can't really trip over this this radio station without finding a Goza right now.
Cheers, man. So, Ben, what was your question? You were asking let's ask this guy, what's his name, Steve or Ben from New Zealand over here.
Yeah, just to quickly repeat, we're talking to Gypsy Brewers and a farm brewer today. What pressures have you had to deal with as a small Gypsy, transient, however you like to refer to yourself, brewer, and what are your methods for kind of handling them?
Well, I guess the biggest pressure that all Gypsy brewers are facing today is brewing space. In New Zealand, up until relatively recently, you could go into breweries and you know, you could sort of brew a few different styles of beers. Basically anything you wanted, but because of the incredible resurgence in craft brewing around the world, and there's people excited everywhere, and there's a lot of guys out there, guests and people that can see, they got dollar signs in their eyes, and they want to have a label. They may not know anything about brewing, but they want to sell beer, they want to be in on the game, and they're popping up everywhere, and each person that does that means one less brewing slot available for someone who really, you know, needs that space. So the pressure really is on availability of brew space, and that's something which is some guys are dealing with, and I think there's a few entrepreneurial guys getting together and building big sort of brewing operations they're setting up now that can deal with just that situation, so they can invite, you know, brewers in.
Is that happening overseas as well? Because in the U.S. we have the Brew Hub operation, which is in Florida, which is opening up in St. Louis too. Then we have Two Roads Brewing, which is pretty much at capacity already with that sort of like double idea model of making their own house beer than selling other people's beer.
Yeah, it's starting to happen everywhere, I think, and it's it's a big capital investment to set up a brewery, but you know, the pressure is coming onto a lot of guys where they have to, I think they're faced with that, and they're going to have to do it.
Just quick, I'm going to call you Steve Ben now because
that's okay. I never confuse.
So you're making beer with these handsome dudes out in Oklahoma.
Yes,
you're also brewed where else? Blue Jacket,
yeah,
near DC. First of all, where can we get those beers you're making? And I mean, Joel, jump in, because I don't know. You brought this guy in. He's the coolest guy we've met in a long time. But it's like, what beers is he making, and where can we buy them? Because I want to try all his beers.
Is he the coolest guy since me?
He's cooler than you, man.
Oh, man.
He looks like you.
I can't play bass like Joel.
But for real, like, tell us the brands. What brands is he making beer with? Because this is like the most obscure Gypsy brewer ever. And he's been hanging out with dudes since Michael Jackson.
So you want product?
I want to. What brands or labels are his beers under, and where can we get?
They're under the Ben Middlemiss Brewing label, right, Ben?
That's correct, Joel.
In Steve? America.
We don't have too much of his beer in stock right now.
But if he's,
but we can get you some. Can you put an order in?
Let's start with, if he's making beer with the Hansons in Oklahoma, where will that beer be sold?
He could tell you that. I mean, I don't really want to even talk about it.
You don't even know.
I was out there actually with him. We had a festival out there with the Hansons, and they played and the girls were there and everything, and we had a beer fest, and they don't have good beer there. And
what girls were there? Where did that come from?
Well, they're called the Fansons.
And then what about the Blue
Jacket? I should have explained that.
Ben, so you said you're making beer with Blue Jacket in D.C.
Yeah, so Blue Jacket, our nephew actually works there, so it's a small world. Sheldon's own the world, Jimmy, you know that. And so he just went over to D.C. after Oklahoma. He just came up to visit in New York, and he's going back to with the Hansons in a few days and going to brew again with them. I don't. He can tell you where that beer's available.
I don't know. But for you guys, because I'm interested more for what we're doing. And then there's Ben Middlemiss Brewing.
Yeah.
You guys sell that in America?
Yeah.
Okay, where do you sell it? Because this is cool. It's like you brought this guy in, and
well, we sell
I can't
it.
Even
well,
get his beer.
I guess because Jimmy's asking, is like, are you guys going to be focusing on draft sales? Are we doing bottle sales? Or where do you, because you know, you're shipping it from overseas. You guys handle a fair amount of New Zealand product.
Yeah.
So which format should we be seeing it in the U.S.? And like any particular styles we should look for in particular?
Well, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't deal directly with New Zealand stuff, so I don't know really the details about what's going on with Ben. I deal with other countries. And we're just friends, you know.
So we're just gonna Google you, right? Everybody Google this guy.
You're not gonna get a straight answer
from
me.
Ben Middlemiss Brewing from New Zealand.
It's rare.
He's the most famous guy we've ever met, and we can't find his beer. It sounds like the Grimm's over here. It's
you
like,
gotta go down to Blue
everybody
Jacket.
Knows.
Blue Jacket is a great spot.
Yeah, I'll have to get some more beer organized to come over. I know I'm gonna have to make some more for these boys, but I've had my double IPA Hodgson here, which is more traditional English style IPA. Uh-huh. And my Nota Bene.
Let's make a deal. Steve, Ben, next time you come on the show, we want to try your beer. We want to have your beer in New York City. Because these guys over here, Grimm's, you're kind of like, you're as famous as him. Everybody knows about you guys.
I was going
and
to
we
say,
can't the, find your beer either.
The best beer is hard to find. That's why it's always out, Jimmy.
Love you guys.
So, Jake, speaking of like beer being rare, you were a one-barrel brewery, and then you went up to a five-barrel brewery. And so at what point... You know, and you're using mostly New York State brewing ingredients. So at what point do you think you'll be able to scale this up any bigger right now? Or do you see the infrastructure kind of increasing in New York State?
For me, I think I can do it. Like I said, we're on a farm, and the farm is growing like enough barley that I could use. So in terms of barley, I have that capacity.
Can you find wheat, rye, and like if you want?
Yeah, they're growing wheat and they're growing rye, so like it's all there. And the hops, you know, it's all who you know, you know. Like I have some friends that are growing some hops for me, but you know, hops are takes a while to really kind of get the.
And there's a proprietary hops out there right now, so you're sort of. Do you find it limits your palate a little bit if you're looking to create beer? So if you're trying to focus on all New York State hops, you can't get Mosaic, maybe you're not going to be able to get Citra.
Yeah.
So you're forced to think in different ways.
But that's really the great thing about... Mm-hmm. Well, I think like when you close yourself off to certain things and you use only what's available to you, I think that's how character is created in a brewery, you know, like, and that's what I hope to do. I mean, this pale ale, you know, it's hopped from Pacific Northwest hops because... I mean, who doesn't want to use Mosaic and Amarillo? They're just amazing hops. And but you know, when you close yourself off to brew kind of like local, super local ingredients, then some really interesting things can happen. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think like you know, there's a lot of room for like these cherries I picked. They're going to go in the Saison. We're going to have like a sour cherry Saison that'll be coming up. And there's plums on the we're in the middle of like a 100-acre orchard. So we got plums, we got peaches, we got pears, there's apples, and actually brought some cider too. We can taste. Really, I'm again, like I said before, like I'm in this position that was very lucky. Mm-hmm. And I do. By using local ingredients, I do have an amazing assortment of ingredients I can call on to make something unique and characteristic of the brewery. So I don't think that's really a problem. It's just kind of the challenge is creativity. You know, how creative can you get with what you have without making a shitty beer? Yeah.
Did you just say shitty?
Yeah, he said we can swear. So I use my. Is there a jar I could put a quarter in or something?
Joe wants to swear too. He's like about.
I have a question for you. Are you interested in using New York microbiology in your beer? Like to me, like, that's the most
East Coast yeast.
That's awesome terroir thing you can do, and that's what I want to. That's what I want to see.
Would you like all to taste New York microbiology at this very moment?
We need
in this room.
Yeah,
can we make the? I want to hear who wants to taste some.
Can we make the science sound? Can
yeah,
we go?
Baby.
Science. Can we get a sound effect?
It's not good. Science sound effect.
All right. That's all right. So I was like,
you got the sound.
It's off the rails now. It's off
the rails. That was good.
That was Steve Benn on bass over there.
So
Jimmy, can you pronounce
it? we're in the middle of a 100-acre orchard, mostly apples. So it's like, you know, I'm like, yeah, let's, I want to make beer, but like, it's really hard to not make cider when you're right in the middle of it. And I asked Ken, the farmer, I was like, hey, I'd like to do a test batch of cider and, you know, a few gallons. And, so he's like, okay, yeah, I'll save some cider for you. And I go to the farm and he's like, hey, I got your cider. And it's like, there's 50 gallons of cider that came back from the market and like, they're half blowing up and like ready to, so I was like, all right, I gotta make some cider with this, and I did a few things with potassium metabisulfate just to kind of kill out what bacteria or yeast were in there. But then some I didn't even touch, and this is the batch. And I had my friend Dan Suarez. I'm not sure if any of you know him.
Suarez family.
He's starting a brewery just up the road. Had him over and. And we blended this and helped me bottle it. And he's like, this is ultra farmhouse, artisanal, connoisseurs, Basque style cider.
It's the best adjective bukkake. Yeah.
But anyway, this is like the...
Steve, do they have this in New Zealand?
Well, yeah, it's probably something similar, I would say. This is a fairly interesting thing I'm looking forward to trying.
So this is kind of like a Basque style cider, and this is the most anticipated tasting ever on this network. This is gonna suck.
He can't even pop the cork.
Are you guys ready?
Come on,
can we get a drum roll? No drum roll. Okay, ready? Okay,
you got the GABF award winners. They're gonna taste this and decide if it's worthy. But
wow, it's like Basque, kind of sad. Basque cider is, I think, it's kind of like not that carbonated. So
this better be bad.
So what they do in Basque country, they kind of like a high pour. They do it out of those barrels. Have you ever seen that?
So it's like more of a cedra.
They like pop a thing out of the barrel and hit it. But whatever. I mean,
it's good, man. It's like sour tart.
It's like a it's nice. Kind of like a sour beer actually, but it's
we're gonna have to wind down.
Is New York biology.
I love
this is delicious.
But Joe, you're gonna talk. Wait, listen. I'm noticing that a lot of brewers also want to make ciders now, and that's been coming up. So Joe, you got really excited when he brought the cider. So do you want to make cider
too? What I want to drink. I want to drink the stuff that just is full of all the life that is around us. You have a farm and you have apples? Hell yes. And it shows. It's really delicious and great.
But this is one of those shows where it's a gateway to many other things. But guess what? We're not talking about macro beers. We're talking about cool things, gypsy brewers and farm brewers. And we get some great guests on. And I really appreciate that everyone came on the show. Josh, again, one more time, tell us about your book, which is doing gangbusters.
If beer course want to buy it, buy it. If not, it's okay.
We love it. And Ben, thanks for coming on, man, Mr. Beer Advocate.
Glad to be here.
All right. And let's just do a quick wrap-up, everybody. Last few thoughts.
I was going to say, Joe and I, after this, are heading over to Northern Spy for a beer dinner. So if anyone's up for some beer and amazing food, you should come by.
Yes. Highly recommend it, too. It's also in the East Village.
After this, I'm just going to go home. So, you know, don't meet me there.
And Jake, where can I buy your beer? From the Ground Brewing.
We are selling at Union Square Farmers Market on Friday and Saturday for the people in New York City. Upstate, we're selling at the Rhinebeck Farmers Market on Sunday. And there's a few bars and restaurants around Rhinebeck and Red Hook.
Where what about for them. People that are far too lazy to ever go into Manhattan?
You have to wait.
What Joel Salatin, remember he was just like, Michael Pollan was like, can I get some of your steak? And he's like, no, sorry.
Let's just say one thing, let's give a big plug. New York State Farm Brewery License really has changed the landscape. And it's cool that you're actually in a brewery on a farm and they're trying to grow grains and all that stuff. Ben, you're in the summer, New York City for the summer, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be following you around all the time, Jimmy. I just want to say that I agree that more and more breweries are expressing interest in cider, which I think is cool. And later this summer, you'll probably start seeing Cider Advocate also.
All right. Congratulations. We got Josh. Okay, Steve, Ben. Dude, tell us your real name, man. You're the coolest guy I've met in a long time.
I think it's Steve. Well, it is Steve, but I don't say it very often. But, I answer to either. I never get confused. I've got to say I've had so much fun on this show. But I am wondering, this cider we're drinking, whether the yeast is it from someone's armpit or something? I'm curious because you never know where something could come from, like that guy, the brewer, the beard, Rogue Brewing, with the yeast came from his beard.
Yeah, John Mayer.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's amazing. Yeast can come from so many places.
Is that true, Josh? True.
I hope John Mayer and John Mayer make a beer together.
His body really is a wonderland. Yeah. We're bringing back to Hansen again, aren't we? Which I think the turnabout for Hansen having beer is just... It's amazing.
All right. So, we went down the road. We went to cider and human whatever yeast. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Unibeer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to everybody. I got Jake, Ben, Joel, Joe, Lauren, Ben, and did I miss anyone, for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network.
That guy, Steve.
Ben. Yeah. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden, Justin Kennedy, engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for joining us, listening next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, let's go. Woo. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.